अपनी श्री कृष्ण यादि करिना अवतार अपने आचार्य भक्ति करिना प्रचार. If Sri Krishna were to appear as an incarnation, he himself could preach devotion by his personal example. We are reading here the compassionate prayers of Sri Advaita Acharya upon seeing the condition of the jivatmas of this age of Kali Yuga, how they were suffering, the pleasures, the pains, sufferings, happiness, distress. You see, for a devotee of the Lord, he sees that every material condition of life is suffering. It's like here, yesterday we were describing the first class prisoners and the third class prisoners. In one sense, first class prisoners are the prisoners who think that they're happy. And the third class prisoners are the prisoners that know that they're suffering. As far as somebody who is not in the prison house, he does not think that one is any better than the other. In fact, one who knows he's suffering may make some arrangement to get out. One who thinks he's happiness, he makes no endeavor. Simply content, satisfied with that illusion of happiness, which ultimately will be transformed into distress. So therefore, the great souls, they feel compassion and pity upon people who are enjoying in this material world. Sometimes neophyte devotees, they go through much struggle, tribulation, trying to become Krishna conscious. And they see that some the people that they knew in the past, they're not Krishna conscious, but they're enjoying a lot. They're happy, they're dancing, they're merry, they're smiling, they have lots of money, they have good success, they have nice family, beautiful children. They're enjoying, thinking, I've given up so much, for what? This is the attitude of a neophyte devotee sometimes. But one who is a little bit advanced in his understanding of Krishna consciousness, understands that even if I am suffering terribly, temporarily, for the purpose of trying to purify my life and become Krishna conscious, I am billions of times more fortunate than someone who is enjoying, like anything, material life. Because we are in the process of entering into that realm of consciousness which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Whereas those who are apparently enjoying material life, they are in the process of simply binding themselves deeper and deeper into the clutches of the laws of karma. So a devotee should not see things according to how it appears with their eyes. A devotee should see things according to the wisdom that he has received through Krishna and his devotees. It's like a man who is having an affair with a woman with AIDS. He thinks she's beautiful. She's lovely. A wise man will think, my God, crazy. He might be enjoying now, but tomorrow he will suffer and die. Huh? So a foolish man will think, oh, such a beautiful woman. I wish I had something like that. Huh? But a wise man knows happiness is actually the seed of distress. In all happiness in this world, whatever form it comes, it is a seed of distress because of its temporary nature, dukkalayam ashashvatam. Therefore, a devotee never aspires or is envious of somebody who is enjoying in this world. He never thinks it very important if he sees someone enjoying in this world. Rather, a devotee should feel pity upon people when they're enjoying as much as when they're suffering. A philanthropist, when he sees somebody suffering from some physical disease or some poverty, he feels, oh, how terrible, I feel very sorry for that person. But actually, a devotee, when he sees a wealthy, healthy man or woman enjoying like anything, feels the same sympathy and pity as he does when he sees someone suffering from poverty and disease. because the heart of that rich man, that so-called happy man, is poverty-stricken and diseased. It is bereft of any Krishna consciousness, of any eternal value in his life. There's no spiritual wealth in his heart, his poverty. And as far as disease, he's suffering the disease of completely misusing his independence to try to enjoy what belongs to Krishna. The disease of Maya. So therefore, Sri Advaita Acharya, he was feeling great compassion, great sympathy for everyone. Whatever particular stage of their illusion they were in. See, according to our karma, we suffer, we enjoy. We suffer, we enjoy. Everybody. There's suffering, there's enjoyment. They're just different stages of the cycle of karma. A devotee just sees that the whole cycle is an illusion. He doesn't just go to one point and say, oh, now you're happy, very nice. Because he knows the cycle, very soon he's going to be in distress. And when someone is in distress, oh, you're distressed, very bad, because in the next cycle he's going to be happy. Right? So the whole thing is an illusion. The whole thing is temporary. So therefore, devotees of the Lord, they should be developing the sense of compassion, sympathy for all persons who are forgetful of their relationship with God. So Sri Advaita Acharya, as it is described here, he was powerful enough as an avatar to do the work of spreading Krishna consciousness, but he appeared as a submissive servitor. So therefore, in this mood, seeing with a compassionate heart the condition of the world, he is here praying to the Lord. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is so mercifully relating to us exactly the words in the mind of this great avatar as he was praying to Krishna to come. Apani Sri Krishna Yadi Kori Navatar, Apane Achari Bhakti Kori Naprachar. If Sri Krishna to appear as an incarnation, he himself could preach devotion by his personal example. In this age of Kali, there is no religion other. Namavinu Kati Kali Dharma Kali Kali Kaiche Habi Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, there is no religion other than the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. But how in this age will the Lord appear as an incarnation? Shuddha Bhave Koriba Krishna Radhan Nirantara Sadainye Koribe Nivedan. I shall worship Krishna in a purified state of mind. I shall constantly petition him in humbleness. Advaita Acharya's essence of how to bring Krishna into our lives. We must worship Krishna in a purified state, and we must constantly petition him in humbleness. This should be our aspiration in life. To constantly petition Krishna in humbleness. And anything that interferes in the development of that humble state of mind, we should be very cautious of. That should be our goal. Our goal should be to become humble servant, to petition Krishna with humbleness. Our goal should not be to aspire for some position which will simply make us proud. If position comes, let us take it with the prayer that we will always remain the humble servant. Let us not aspire for anything but humble service. Because only this humble servitor attitude of worshipping Krishna will attract Krishna to come into our hearts. Aniya Krishna re karon kirtana sanchar tabe se Advaita nama sapala amar. My name is Advaita. My name Advaita will be fitting if I am able to induce Krishna to inaugurate the movement of chanting of the holy name. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport that the Nandulas Mayavadis, who falsely believe that they are non-different from the Lord, is unable to call him like Advaita Prabhu. Advaita Prabhu is non-different from the Lord, yet in his relationship with the Lord, he does not merge in him, but eternally renders service unto him as a plenary portion. This is inconceivable for Mayavadis, because they think in terms of mundane sense perception, and therefore think that non-dualism necessitates losing one's separate identity. It is clear from this verse, however, that Advaita Prabhu, although retaining his separate identity, is non-different from the Lord. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached the philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous oneness with the Lord and difference from him. Conceivable dualism and monism are conceptions of the imperfect senses, which are unable to reach the transcendence because the transcendence is beyond the conception of limited potency. The actions of Sri Advaita Prabhu, however, give tangible proof of inconceivable non-dualism. One who therefore surrenders unto Sri Advaita Prabhu can easily follow the philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous dualism and monism. Sripad Shankaracharya taught the doctrine of monism. And monism is correct. And Madhvacharya, he taught the doctrine of dualism. And dualism is also correct. We are one with God, and we are different than God. And to the mundane senses, to be one and different at the same time is inconceivable, is it not? And Prabhupada says, conceivable dualism and monism are conceptions of the imperfect senses. In other words, to try to conceive these things with our imperfect senses is impossible. It is imaginary. Therefore, we must accept that God is inconceivable, and that the jivatma, in relationship to God, that relationship is inconceivable to our mind and senses. We are simultaneously one with God in that, in quality, there is no difference in substance between ourselves and God, as there is no difference between the sun ray and the sun planet. But in quantity, there is a difference. The ray is the part, and the sun is the whole. So therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought to this world the synthesis of these two greatest philosophies of Vedic thought, and how the synthesis of the two creates the most complete and perfect realization of God and of the Jivatma, the living entity. Achintya Veda Abheda Tattva. That we are inconceivably one with Krishna and at the same time different. We are one in that, on another level, a devotee is one in purpose. He is one with the will of the Lord. To merge with Krishna means to merge our hearts with his heart. But we always remain his servitor. We always remain separate in that he is the master and we are the servant. Eternally. So here the name Advaita, he says, will be fitting. Advaita means duality. Advaita means no duality. Here is the greatest bhakta teaching that we are eternally servants of Krishna. And he was named Advaita. It will be fitting if I am able to induce Krishna to inaugurate the movement of the chanting of the holy name. So, in this sense, Advaita means to be one with the will of God, to be one with the desire of God through love, through servitude and through surrender. Krishna vasa koribena kona aradane vicharite ekashloka oilatandra mane. While he was thinking about how to propitiate Krishna by worship, The following verse came to his mind. Tulsi dala matrena jalasya chulukena va vikrinite swam atmanam bhaktebhyo bhaktavatsalaha. This is a verse from the Gautamiya Tantra. Sri Krishna, who is very affectionate toward his devotees, sells himself to a devotee who offers merely a tulsi leaf and a palm full of water. E slokarta acharya korena vicharan Krishna ke tulasi jala deya jejan Tharana sodite Krishna korena chintan Jala tulasi rasama kichugari nahidhan. Advaitacharya consider the meaning of this verse in this way. Not finding any way to repay the debt he owes to one who offers him a tulsi leaf and water, Lord Krishna thinks, there is no wealth in my possession that is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. There is a story of how Krishna was going to leave Dwarka, and the queens came together deciding how to stop Krishna from leaving Dwarka. So they were begging, pleading, Krishna, please do not leave. He was going just to go to visit some other place. But they didn't want to live even for a second without him. Just like our Stefan is going to Dwarka tonight. Krishna wanted to leave Dwarka for some time. So he said, we will offer your weight in all of our gold and jewelry if you remain. He said, all right. So they put all the queens of Krishna, Satyabhama was putting all beautiful jewelry, gold, diamonds, everything on one side of the scale. Krishna was on the other. No matter what they put, Krishna outweighed it. So they were thinking, this is his mystic power. There's no way we can stop him now from from leaving us. So then they took all the jewelry off. And Rukmini, she was the principal queen of Sri Krishna, she took one tulsi leaf and she placed it on the scale. And immediately the tulsi leaf outweighed Krishna. And then he said, now I will stay. And this, here it explains, Advaita was remembering this verse, that Sri Krishna, who is very affectionate toward his devotees, sells himself to a devotee who offers merely a tulsi leaf and a palm full of water. Tulsi Devi is an expansion of Brinda Devi, who is a direct expansion of Sri Radharani. Brinda Devi is not a jivatma. Brinda Devi is of the tattva of Srimati Radharani, and she is the proprietor of Vrindavan Dham. Vrindavan Dham was named after her, Vrindavan, forest of Brinda. So Brinda Devi, there is a beautiful story how Brinda Devi, everyone knows in Vrindavan that all of Braja is her land. She is the predominating deity. So out of her great love for Srimati Radharani, she offered everything she had to Sri Radha. And therefore Radharani is called Vrindavaneshwari. That she is the goddess, she is the queen of Vrindavan. Why is she the queen of Vrindavan? Because out of love, Brinda Devi have given everything for her. So this same Brinda Devi has expanded herself as the life force of every tulsi plant. And the leaf of the tulsi plant is none other than the offering of love of Brinda Devi to Sri Krishna. And for this reason, the offering of tulsi to Lord Sri Krishna is the topmost form of worship. Of course, to offer with love and devotion. But Tulsi Devi is already offering her leaf with love and devotion. Really, we are not offering the tulsi. Brinda Devi is offering that leaf, and we are just somehow or other, by the merciful good fortune of Brinda Devi's kindness upon us, we are allowed to assist her in her pure devotion to Sri Krishna. When we offer Tulsi, Brinda Devi is offering the Tulsi leaf. It is growing from her own body. And every Tulsi leaf that is growing is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And when we assist her in her service by offering that leaf to Krishna, then we are engaging in her love. We are a part of her loving affair. And Krishna is so much, he is so much subordinate to the love of Brinda Devi, that anyone who assists her also shares that loving reciprocation that is taking place. So in this way, it is explained, and Advaita Acharya was thinking, how dear Tulsi is to Sri Krishna. If I offer Tulsi leaves to Sri Krishna, then he will have to answer my prayers. And of course, the water from the Ganges. The Ganges is so dear and sacred to Krishna. Why is the Ganges water so dear and sacred to Krishna? Because there's no one more dear to Krishna than one who helps, who is willing to make all sacrifices to purify other of their sins. It's like Krishna says in Gita, there's no one more dear to me than my devotee who is preaching my glories. Because the devotee preaching the glories of the Lord is the person who is purifying people of their sins and helping them come closer to Krishna. So the Ganges, since time immemorial, she has been, when people go to bathe in her, she takes the sins within her own body and purifies the sins of everyone who bathes. So because of her merciful, compassionate, she's really a preacher. She's a great preacher, Tulsi, Ganga Devi. Anyone who simply touches her, drinks her water, looks at her, is purified of sins. So because Ganga Devi is doing this great seva of assisting the Lord in bringing back his lost servitors, therefore Ganga Devi is most dear to Sri Krishna. Advaita Acharya considered the meaning of this verse in this way, not finding any way to repay the debt he owes to one who offers him tulsi leaf and water. Lord Krishna thinks, there is no wealth in my possession that is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. Krishna says this. Krishna says, he is the proprietor of everything that exists in all material and spiritual worlds. And he is saying, there is no wealth in my possession that is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. What does that mean? That means there is no wealth that is greater than the pure bhakti of my devotees. Patram pushpam palam toyam yomi bhakta prayachchati. If one offers me even a leaf or a water, a little fruit or flower, if it is offered with love and devotion, Krishna is purchased by that offering. Even the most insignificant offering of a little water and a leaf is, Krishna feels that I have no wealth to repay such a devotee who offers that with love. Krishna is bhakta vatsal. He is always subordinate to the love of his devotees. Tabe atma vechikori nera sohodan ete bhavi acharya korena aradhan. Thus the Lord liquidates the debt by offering his own self to the devotee. Considering this, the acharya began worshipping the Lord. Purport. Through devotional service, one can easily please Lord Krishna with a leaf of the tulsi plant and a little water. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, patram pushpam palam toyam, when offered with devotion, very much pleases him. He universally accepts the services of his devotees. Even the poorest devotees in any part of the world can secure a small flower, fruit, or leaf and a little water. And if these offerings, especially tulsi leaves and Ganges water, are offered to Krishna with devotion, he is very satisfied. It is said that Krishna is so pleased by such devotional service that he offers himself to his devotee in exchange for it. Srila Advaita Acharya knew this fact, and therefore he decided to call for the personality of Godhead Krishna to descend by worshipping the Lord with tulsi leaves and the water of the Ganges.
Ganga jala tulsi manjari anukshan, Krishna pada padma bhavi kore samarpan.
Thinking of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, he constantly offered tulsi buds and waters from the Ganges.
Krishnera avhana kori kori ahankar, emate krishneri kore laila avatar.
He appealed to Sri Krishna with loud calls and thus made it possible for Krishna to appear.
Chaitanyera avatari emukya hetu, bhaktira ichaya avatari dharma setu.
Therefore, the principal reason for Sri Chaitanya's descent is this appeal by Advaitacharya. The Lord, the protector of religion, appears by the desire of his devotee. Is there any questions?
This doubt used to come in my mind that this material world, we accept it as the problems because we have realized it. This is the Dukkha, and everywhere we see it, and we have realized ourselves also that these are the problems which we cannot overcome. Although it is written in the scriptures that in the spiritual world there is completely blissful, but here we have realized it, and we don't have that type of a high faith and determination that there also there is no problem like here. How to convince ourselves that there is no problem? Here also there are problems.
There are no problems here either. If you remember Krishna. The only problem is a lack of Krishna consciousness, either in this world or the next. If we see everything in its perfect relationship with Krishna, there is no problems here either. The only problem is we forget our relationship with Krishna, and we forget how everything is related to Krishna. This is the world of forgetfulness. In the spiritual world, there is no forgetfulness. Therefore, there is no problem. There's no problem anywhere. But in the spiritual world, no one forgets Krishna, ever. Therefore, everyone understands in full the perfection of everything. When people want to forget Krishna, they come to this world. And because of that forgetfulness, we are seeing problems everywhere and in everything. All the problems in this life are due to the effects of karma, due to the temporary condition of this material nature. We are always bound by the actions and reactions of karma. But in the spiritual world, there is no actions or reactions of karma. Why? Because everything is done in loving devotion to the Lord. Karma only takes place for material selfish activities. There's no karma for devotional activities. So because there everyone is engaged in devotional service, there's no karma. There's no actions or reactions. There's only lila. No one forgets Krishna in that lila. But this is a world of forgetfulness. And in that forgetfulness, all of our actions have reactions. And therefore there is great suffering. That is the world of eternity. This is the world of temporary everything. Birth and death. The only problem is forgetting Krishna.
So there is no forgetfulness in that spiritual world. Why did we originally believe that it was the original crime, the original sin that we committed?
Because you have the choice. If you want to forget, you can forget. But as soon as you desire to forget, you're no longer there, you're here. So you should give up your foolishness.
When one is there, how could one want to just give that up?
That is foolishness. So we should not make the mistake. I know. If you admit you're stupid, you should do something about it.
Realize it now, here. When you're there, how could one? I can't imagine how originally I wanted to give that up.
We want to enjoy separate from Krishna. that facility to enjoy separate from Krishna was not there, there would be no real sense of surrender and love. So Krishna wants us to taste the sweetness of surrender and love. So he gives that freedom. And that freedom is eternal. Exactly how it happens, you will not understand. But it has happened. And we're here. So let us do something about it. Let us go back home, back to God. Any other questions? Yes? Huh? Comment?
Desire means the root cause of existence, whether it's material or spiritual. And desire generates that kind of intelligence, whether it is utilized independently of Krishna, then it becomes material intelligence. So naturally, it is called covering intelligence. That covers the intelligence.
Any other questions?
That is wealthy, aristocratic, and highly educated, and through all of their artificial means, they're trying to remove the pain, material suffering, and solve the problems of their life. But as a result of the karma that they're producing, they're going to become most likely dogs. Not literally, necessarily a dog, but dog means animal. If you waste your human form of life and not use it in the service of the Lord, you become animal. Such a sorrowful condition. And then there are the third class prisoners, those who are poverty stricken, who are less materially opulent, whose whole aim in life is somehow or other to become like the first class prisoners. The whole motivation is that somehow or other, by hook, by crook, I have to work, I have to make it. If I only become like a first class prisoner, then I'll be happy. But an intelligent person understands whether you're a first, second, or third class prisoner, as long as you're in the prison, you're bound to suffer. Therefore, the devotee sees them all equally with pity and compassion. He tries to do everything within his power, everything with the power that God has given him, to remove these people from this prison house forever, and give them a liberated state of shelter from all his feet to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any questions?
Big, right? Your brain is about this big. That's the capacity of what you can store. You can store this much knowledge in here, in all these little brain cells. Huh? Do you think Krishna is limited to a brain this big? Krishna doesn't even need a brain. He doesn't have a brain like yours. That in itself is inconceivable. He knows everything without a brain. Try to explain that in your medical seminars. That is the difference. Krishna can see through his feet. He could hear through his eyes. He could taste through his eyes. Can you do that? It's inconceivable. That's why we love Krishna. Because he's like this. If anyone else was like that, we would love them. But factually, if you love Krishna, automatically you love every part of him. And we are all parts of him.
If everyone was part of you, I would love you. Then I could love everyone. If everyone was part of me, you could just repose all your love in me, and that would just create a universal love. But that's not true. We're all just little particles. That is why we want to love Krishna. Because he is great. Not great like Napoleon or great like Alexander the Great. He's great like Krishna. They're all dead and gone. All that's left of them is terrible rumors. Huh? Does that answer your question?
Why is the
different planets? It's the different planets of the nine planets which we know in this world. And all of them are revolving around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
What is the problem here?
Behind the universe? Because Krishna, well, there's many purposes. Whatever Krishna does has infinite purposes. But one is he wants to show you that he can do what you cannot do. So that you'll surrender to him. He could have created it another way if he wanted to. That's the way he likes it. The different planets facilitate different forms of enjoyment and suffering. So according to our karma, we go to these different planets. They're different atmospheres. And why exactly he does what he does, how exactly he does what he does, that is a wonderful topic to discuss. But right now I'm supposed to go, I'm supposed to dress Krishna. Can you understand that? That in itself is inconceivable. I'm going to give Krishna a bath and dress him. Me? Huh? He's the Lord of the universe, the controller of all controllers. He's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. He's everywhere. He's all-knowing. And he's waiting for me to give him bath. Huh? So I don't think I should keep him waiting any longer. But anyways, thank you all for coming today. And please come this evening. We will speak about this.